Here at ExchangeWire, we spent the past few months building a new platform called Connect. It helps buyers and brands find the best tech solutions for their media campaigns. It's free for buyers to list their campaign requirements and for tech suppliers to set up an account so they can get connected to buyers. Find out more at exchangewire.com/connect or by emailing info@thewirecorp.com.
The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the MadTech Podcast, another extraordinarily special. Yeah, okay.
You are extraordinarily special.
Lindsay Roundtree, sound guy, shaking her head, getting ready to turn me off, I think. Kieran O'Kane for the third week in a row, sick to death of the MadTech Podcast, I think.
I think I'm going to turn this into my own podcast.
Which would be so different from the way that it's currently operated.
This is the cockcast.
Oh my God. Sorry, Rodney, real sound guy is going to have to edit this. I'm diving straight in, listeners, because you don't need to put up with this shit preamble. First news story of the week I want to chat with the two of you about is Nielsen, who we did speak about, as Kieran pointed out in the pre-chat before we started recording a couple of weeks ago.
He's not thrilled.
Yes. Nielsen are now launching an ID graph measurement tool. So this is in addition to the story we brought up a couple of weeks ago about them increasing the data that they're using for their measurement system across TV. And they were doing that by, as a new thing, starting to ingest set-top box data from set-top box users in the US. So now they're going one step further, launching an ID graph, which will bring together measurement points such as email addresses, name, etc., anonymized, I suppose. Well, actually not. Your email address can't be anonymized. In any case, using ID markers to draw together an identity graph. This is, I think, puts them in competition potentially with other ad tech providers who are developing identity solutions. They've said that they're going to be developing this by using the Trade Desk's Unified ID 2.0 as a baseline. So they're going to be reconciling their solution with that. But it still seems to me that it would be putting them in competition with other identity solution providers, albeit those other identity solutions might be being built and based around different data points and different principles. But at the end of the day, it's another example of an ad tech company trying to move beyond browser and device-based identity, which is moving us away from things like IDFA and cookies. Kieran, I'm going to you first because you don't like talking about Nielsen, so get it off.
I don't know what
now.
The hell Nielsen is, hey. What is it?
I just called them an ad tech company, which is not true.
I don't know. I mean,
I guess they're a data measurement company.
Well, if they're a data measurement company, they're just basically taking money out of their customers' pockets, aren't they? I don't know. I mean,
how are they doing that?
Well, they're in the ID business now. I thought Nielsen were selling
their data.
Are they going to start? Like, so think about Nielsen, right? Well, where's that going to sit? So it's going to sit in the ad server. So effectively, they're a media business now. Like, you know what I mean? They're actually taking a percentage of the media or they're charging for it. So they're not a measurement. Well, it doesn't look like they're measuring anymore. So I don't really get that company at all. I can see what they're doing. But this is sort of like feeding into the ID wars. Like, we've got this massive kind of like massive fight going on who's going to be the ID of the new era, like, you know? So, and CTV, obviously, in the US is huge. Not so much here, because that's a fact. So I guess they're trying to play into that. I mean, they've got a $5.5 billion mark cap to protect. But I just wonder how this works with all the rest of the IDs. Like, so you got Trade Desk ID, you've got LiveRamp ID, and you've now got Nielsen ID. We've got a load of IDs here in Europe. You know, telco IDs, and how does a buyer make sense of all this nonsense? Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of targeting pieces here. For me, measurement is still the most important thing here, right? You can have as much target if you want. If we can't measure how effective that campaign was, there's really no point. Why is Nielsen developing an ID? I think they should be just trying to fix their measurement solution.
Well, and I quote from the article that we referenced for this particular conversation, which is from MediaPost. And they say, to reconcile with other first-party ID efforts, Nielsen will be working with the Trade Desk and their industry-wide unified ID 2.0 effort, is what they've called it. So, you know, I mean, in answer to your question, Kieran, how does this work with the Trade Desk's ID solution? That's obviously a nod to that, but it doesn't really extrapolate on literally how it will work. But I guess it's Nielsen thinking that they can derive value from all of the data that they're gathering across their measurement system and pouring it into something that is unified in some way. And I guess if they're saying that they're willing to work with the Trade Desk's unified ID, then they're not looking to usurp it. They're not looking to create a separate ID, but they're looking to make use of the data that they've got at their disposal. Lindsay?
Yeah, I would say that this is largely, if you look at what Nielsen is good at and does well and is known for, as Kieran said, it's the measurement piece, it's the measurement attribution analytics piece. And I think that it's, for from their perspective, it's probably trying to bring in, because they refer to it as cross, there's an argument going on opposite me. This is quite hilarious. There's literally a silent argument happening opposite me.
I tell you why, this sums up my week.
With Exchange Wire and being around Kieran and Rachel.
Well, it's because we're trying to record a podcast and Kieran is busy emailing people about I don't really know what.
Now he's got a calculator.
Anything. I didn't do anything.
He's just written boobs on a calculator.
I did not. That's a calculation.
This is how mature.
It's an algorithm. You wouldn't understand.
This is how mature things get around here.
We're going to have to bring these wondered. Team podcasts.
It's an OnlyFans algorithm.
Oh my God. He's bringing up OnlyFans on the Mad Tech podcast. What was I saying about Nielsen?
I just got distracted by my Kieran's sign language argument.
Yeah, I just... Christ alive.
We've got another podcast today as well.
It's exhausting. Absolutely exhausting.
You two need to up your game, really.
Yeah, we do.
We do. Anyway, yeah. Nielsen, what's it all about? Well, who are they?
Fucking hell.
Lindsay, right. Anything else to add on that?
I forgot what I was saying. I was basically, what I was trying to say was that Nielsen's measurement ASP product is going to be bringing what the Trade Desk offer from a digital perspective and the digital channel perspective, and tying in what Nielsen do from the offline perspective, but also the channels that the Trade Desk and other ID solutions aren't really touching to build a device graph. And so I think from the attribution perspective, that will make what Nielsen are trying to do potentially interesting, because for those that are trying to do omni-channel measurement and omni-channel attribution, that's where I think Nielsen probably have something somewhere to play.
Are they going to? I'd love to see the commercials around this. How the hell do you sell this in? Like, so you sell this in as a media play? Do you tie it in with the subscription you already have to Nielsen? I'd love to see how those. Nielsen's just a bloody mess. I hope this is the last story about Nielsen we ever do. Like, I really do.
I'm going to try and seek out Nielsen stories just to annoy you.
Yeah, and then I'm tempted to do the opposite, Lindsay, because of the sign language argument that we had. But thank you very much for your views, Kieran and Lindsay. Moving on to the second story.
Unbelievable.
I can see why they're jumping in, though. Lots of money in IDs.
Well, yeah, and also because legitimately the industry needs to find other ways of measurement, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. Like, if you look at who's going after that, right? InfoSum are definitely going after that TV market, right? Brian Lesser hired, and, you know, they seem to be going after CTV. So CTV is the holy grail, right? That's where a lot of the money seems to be flowing, because the CPMs are higher. There's a whole, you know, multi-billion dollar business that has yet to be disrupted, because it's basically kind of, it's almost a monopoly of the big networks in the US and to a certain extent in Europe. You've got a certain amount of broadcasters that concentrate spend in the market. So it's a big disruptable space. That's where the money is. And I guess Nielsen's going, right, we want to get part of this. So I don't know how all this stuff is going to work together, because what we're heading towards is a massively fragmented ID space.
Well,
where we used to have the cookie you know, to an extent, we don't. We just now have this, which is good for innovation, I guess.
Well, to an extent, but this is one of the reasons that they use for putting forward this product, because there's so much fragmentation across the media landscape. Well, is this adding to the fragmentation, or is this trying to simplify matters?
But is it going to be like a soup of IDs? So you have, you know, your digital ID, which could be LiveRamp or UDID. Is it UDID that trade desk?
Unified right. ID 2.0.
Right, the UID. And then you've got, you know, your digital home sort of ID, and you've got your audio ID, and you're going to bring all... Is it going to be bringing it all together in some kind of attribution model that you have to build yourself? I guess that's kind of exciting because it's all bespoke, but probably a massive headache for a lot of marketers trying to do these massive, like, cross-channel campaigns. I suppose that's where the value of an agency or consultancy comes in, because they're able to kind of bring all this together. So, I mean, it's good, but it does kind of bring down the Chinese wall between measurement and targeting, right? That's the part that confuses me here, and how you actually become like a measurement, you know, an independent measurement tool, and you're also a targeting piece for media. That's where I see the problem.
It's a conflict.
Yeah.
Right, I'm moving us on.
Thanks, God.
Yep, thanks, Kieran.
Nielsen, my favourite story.
It looks like there's cigarette ash on the floor here. Have you been sitting in the office smoking fags while no one's been around?
Oh, you know where that's from, hey? The windows are open all the time, and those lads on the top of the roof smoking. Neighbours next door. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they're always up there smoking fags.
So there's cigarette ash on the floor of the office from the lads upstairs on the roof terrace smoking.
Yeah, when it comes down and...
Okay, that's interesting.
I could show you the physics.
Right. Okay. There. Yeah, if you could whiteboard that'd be good. Right.
Sponsored by Nielsen.
They'd definitely be on for that. Apple have reduced their App Store commission rates from 30% down to 15% for app developers who are making less than $1 million a year. So this is big news for small app developers. Of course, the App Store's commission rates have been under debate and in controversy for quite some time. It does nothing to the arguments from the likes of the enormous app stores and gaming developers that were very irritated about it in the first instance, the likes of Epic Games, for example, because Apple will continue to get 30% of commission from any in-app purchases from those developers. What's interesting about this, though, is that it seems to come at a time when Apple are otherwise being heavily criticised for a lot of other practices, including anti-competition activities. I mean, last week we discussed further IDFA changes, and I put to you and Alex whether, you know, Apple's efforts at changing IDFA, which appears to be the right thing to do from the user point of view, was also having a sideline effect of encouraging app developers to make money through in-app purchases away from targeted advertising. And so it feels that it's interesting that this has come at that time. Also, a little bit of research that was reported in the article that flushed this out, again from MediaPost, is that actually Apple only make will only look to be reducing their revenue off the back of this change in commission rates by 0.5%. So that's tiny. And it says that Apple makes the majority of their app revenue, in-store app revenue, from those big app developers. So what's your point of view on this, Lindsay?
I think it's the classic watch my left hand while I do something dodgy with my right hand type thing. Mm. The Apple are playing lip
service.
You do that
all the time, Lindsay. Yeah, well. Your left hand is the one your right hand is doing after the day, like...
That is true that your left hand doesn't know what your right hand's doing. Kieran, I wouldn't say she's like trying to deceive anyone.
Her brain is deceived. That's what I'm saying. Like.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's, I suppose, one way of looking
my
at it.
My brain is deceived. Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's flattering. Again, what was I saying?
you were talking about left hands and right hands.
Sleight of hand from Apple.
Yeah, I feel like it's
all
lip style, service,
no substance,
right? Or as Kieran referred to it, it's virtue signalling. Because he's apparently learnt that phrase
learnt
this week.
That, yeah, exactly. That's
but
the only reason
it's interesting
he said
that. Well, the fascinating thing for me is that I would have wrongly assumed that, much like Google and Facebook, their revenue sources, I would wrongly have assumed that the Apple's App Store revenue sources would have come from the long tail rather than the short tail. So that's surprising that, but they obviously will have calculated this very, very cleverly to work out if we make the threshold $1.5 million, that means our revenue will drop by 15%. If we make it $1 million, we'll only lose like 5% and we'll look really good.
Because not even 5%, 0.5%.
Oh, yeah, sorry, 0.5%. Yeah. We're helping smaller creators and smaller app developers. So it's great. I'm delighted for the smaller app developers.
Yeah, it'll make a big difference for them.
Massive difference for them. But for Apple, it's sneaky. They're being classic sneaky Apple.
I'd agree with that, Ciaran.
I mean, like, you're like, go, way, look at the profits have gone up, and you hit 1.5 million and you're on the threshold. I mean, like, it's hardly like...
That's true. It's not like a tax bill, is it? Like, you have a threshold. It's anything...
Yeah.
Above that.
Anything.
So it's kind of like clever PR, right? But it doesn't really help them. I mean, like, smart litigator is smart... legislators will look at that and go, you know what I mean?
See through
it. That's a load of bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? It's clever from them, but it's clever PR, but really... It's not that clever if we're able to unpick it in a
40 minute podcast. Like,
for them, it's like, you know, get them off
it's
our
not
back.
Rocket science.
Well, like, you know, in the court of public relations, it's a great win.
I mean, the headline looks good, right? Like reducing commissions from 30% down to 15%. Well,
you
hey,
get into the detail though,
but
hey,
exactly, Apple, and then you realise what's really going on.
Apple remain a monopoly, and they have an expensive road bump or speed bump in that ecosystem, and they are taking their lion's share. And whether or not their activity in IDFA is deliberately designed to force more activity through their app ecosystem, who knows? I mean, you know, you could be cynical and say that was the whole point of it, but you could also say that privacy is a huge selling point for any product right now, given the bad press and the bad smell around Facebook and the bad press and the bad smell around Google. Privacy is a huge selling point. I mean, they've wrapped their marketing around it for all their new products, especially in the phone categories. So you know, but then on the flip side, you could say, well, you know, getting rid of IDFA helps them sort of, you know, push people into the apps. And then obviously they're taking their massive road toll of 30% for in-app. Mm. And then obviously they're quite aggressive about people who try and sort of hack the system, Epic being a good example. It doesn't matter. Right? Like these ecosystems are going to be pulled over the coals over the next couple of years. Apple have one of these biggest sort of, like, it's a duopoly, right? It's Android and it's Apple, iOS. So those two, Google and Apple, are heading into they're in the crosshairs of the anti-competitive legislator. So that's inevitable. So something like this, it's nice, but it's a waste of time in the long run, because, you know, the Biden government, he hasn't announced who he's got in, what's one of those positions is going to be, Elizabeth Warren's going to get a pretty senior position in the cabinet. It hasn't been announced yet because probably just trying to get rid of Trump before they announce some of the more controversial sort of left-leaning picks. But if she gets a job in one of those portfolios which covers the competition piece, they're in trouble. I tell you, this is not the end. This is just the beginning.
No, I agree. She's the Margaret Vestager of the US, Elizabeth Warren, in that anti-competition, under that anti-competition banner. Lindsay, any final words on Apple and their shenanigans in the App Store, or have we upset you too much with the left-hand, right-hand thing?
Oh, I feel upset now. I don't know. My left hand won't know what my right hand's doing, so my brain's too tricked now.
And I mean, the irony of that...
I am trying to do...
I was about to say, when you're actually doing something with your left hand and something different with your right hand right
and
now...
I'm not doing very well. I got shouted at by sound guy last week, whatever it was. For
really?
Not, yeah.
Yeah, for being too loud.
Good job you're not eating a baguette, like, because those baguettes kind of attack you sometimes.
Most things attack me. Yeah. Yeah.
Inside joke there, listeners.
Yeah.
Carry on, Lindsay.
What was the question?
Did you have anything else to add on that Apple story? Is it worthwhile? I mean, look, like we said, it will make a difference for small app developers for the time being.
for the time being. But actually, Kieran makes a good point. Like, if this gets them over to a certain threshold, then it becomes completely irrelevant.
Christmas.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It isn't like they will then pay 30% for anything over a million. They'll pay 30% the entire lot. So it'll wipe out you almost don't want to be above a million. And you sort of wonder if there'll be some developers that are on a medium scale that will start breaking out companies and having kind of secret umbrella companies to ensure that they can all be underneath the threshold. You don't know. Like, I'd probably try and do that because it's a massive chunk.
Well, you can run the
massive
app.
Chunk.
You could run the app through different, as you say, companies in different jurisdictions. I mean, that's one way. But Apple are all over that as well. This is what I'm talking about.
Of course they are.
Complete control.
Apple know how Apple play the game themselves, so they know how
people
play it. They know
what the workarounds are likely to be. Yeah.
But it kind of just smacks right back into the anti-competitive piece again. Like, so, you know, you saw Amazon go into the pharmacy space in the US this week. I mean, like, it's inevitable these companies are getting broken up. They're just waiting for someone to do it.
They've just got their fingers in too many pies, right? And it's too obvious. And it's even that example that we've talked about, you know, here, and we talked about it last week, the notion that maybe IDFA changes is, you know, shoehorning app developers into, you know, in-app monetization. That might not be the principle behind it, but it looks like it. And it looks like it because Apple control that entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
If they were separate companies, people wouldn't be so suspicious of their motivations.
I'm not convinced about the IDFA stuff, right? So,
don't need to go into that.
No,
though,
but just a quick, because this sort of comes into the conversation around ad tech. No, just seriously, because into the conversation around ad tech has an obsession about we need to stop Google introducing privacy tools in Chrome, right? That was one of the things this week, and I was like going, why are you bothering, right? Why are we not innovating, right? There's plenty of solutions out there, right?
Yes, your point was it doesn't look good for ad tech to be arguing the point.
IDFA and the deprecation of third-party cookies is the biggest opportunity for ad tech in 10 years, because you know what it does? It takes all the resources that have been concentrated in these zombie companies, which I call Zad Tech companies in ad tech, right? Zad Tech, if you will.
Trademark.
When did you start calling them Zad Tech?
I don't know. That's the first time I've heard
zombie
him say that.
Zombie ad tech companies are cookie-based companies that are going nowhere, sideways. And takes all that capital and reinvests it into like innovative ID measurement tools, whether it's built around persistent IDs like email, whether it's built around the blockchain. There is so much innovation in this space, and I just sit there and go, we're going to stop Google doing, why would you stop Google introducing privacy tools? You just look like an arsehole. You know, brands, even that thing that came out this week, there's no brand names against it because the brands just see it as bad PR. Who is Unilever going to say, yeah, we're part of that organ, we're going to stop people using privacy in Chrome? I mean, what and what planet do you exist in? How can you stop a person?
Oh, the ones hiding behind the trade bodies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like being tracked around the internet, right? And all the rest. We've gone through this, right? We lost that conversation. We lost that war. And rightly so, right? And now privacy first. I think Apple and Google are doing this industry a massive service by getting rid of IDFA.
Eliminating those tracking capabilities. Okay, well,
it takes power, as well, Rich, one last thing. It takes power away from Google and Apple if we create things beyond them, right? If we're not dependent on them, we build our own shit away from them. Then we are a self existing, like, you know, industry. We're not dependent on
self-sufficient.
Google. Self-sufficient, sorry. So we're not dependent on the double-click cookie. Right, we're not dependent on Google stack, and that's the way it should be. Ad tech needs to innovate around these companies because I feel that we have imprisoned ourselves in many ways, and this is the reason why, you know, like an IAB meeting, right? Loads of ad tech voices and Google and Facebook sit in the background, and Google just says something, that's it, right? That's how it works in the IAB, right? And no offense to the IAB, but that is actually how it works. We don't need that anymore.
Interesting,
right? Yes. Okay, let's move on to the third story, which is one of which takes us firmly back into the territory of one of these big monopolistic companies doing something which doesn't seem fair. So this is YouTube announcing that, well, they weren't announced. I doubt very much whether they announced it, actually. This is YouTube making some changes to the way that they run ads on their platform. platform pertaining to their partner program. So they've made some changes that now mean that adverts can be run alongside any videos within the platform, even from those creators who are not part of their partner platform. So as I understand it, and I'm happy to be corrected if anyone wants to write in. Imagine, remember when people... Anyway, never mind. Let's show my age.
We have a new segment, the mailbag. Hold on, let me pick this one up.
I'd love
shuffle,
that.
Shuffles.
I'd
Kieran,
love that.
You're a massive dickhead. Oh, that comes from Rachel and Lindsay. All right, Rachel, Lindsay, I'm looking at you right now.
Okay, descending into quite eccentric territory here. Let me try and get this story out. So the YouTube Partner Program meant that certain people, you applied for membership on the partner program, which meant that you could have advertising running alongside your content and you would get some revenue off the back of that. You needed to meet a certain amount of threshold, so you needed to be of a certain size and a certain viewer, have a certain viewership and so forth to be approved on their partner program. So some content creators wouldn't be eligible for the partner program, and some content creators didn't want to operate within the partner program because they didn't want advertising running against their content. YouTube have now created a scenario where they're saying that they can run adverts against any content on the platform. They will, of course, select the content they think is appropriate, so they won't be, they're arguing they're not trying to run ads alongside inappropriate content. But the point is, they're now running it alongside content from creators who are not part of the partner program. They therefore don't get any revenue off the back
That's fucking outrageous.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. So, like, what Google have done...
In your outrage, could you be close to your microphone,
sorry,
please?
Sorry, Lindsay. You. But, think about it this way. Most, like, including ourselves, right, have used YouTube as a means for our video hosting, right? And we haven't actually done any... We haven't opted into partner programs, but a lot of our stuff is sponsored content, right? We do a lot of organic, but we do sponsored content. So that's, I'm just thinking about us, right? There's loads of B2B companies, and even B2C companies have done that. And now you're saying, like, Google are saying, we're just going to run pre-roll ads against this. I'm going, you've literally lulled us in with your free shit. And now you're going to benefit off the back of us. And, like, I'm not surprised. I was just sitting there wondering one day, actually, was looking at there. Because, like, YouTube is a wonderful tool. If you record stuff... whiteboard sessions that we do, events that we do, panels, etc. Great for us, great for our sponsors, great for our audience, because they can all
access the content readily and easily.
And now we've got 6-second ads that Google can send to anybody. So, like, if you're an ad tech company looking to sponsor anything, you can literally take Digiday or ExchangeWire or Ad Exchanger, and you can run ads against it, right? And that content might have already been sponsored content or whatever. I think it's outrageous. Like, it just smacks at the power they have. Like, we're going to be thinking about it. We're going to start putting all our stuff in Vimeo.
Yeah.
And you know, why would we start using YouTube? I mean, we've got a lot of stuff on there. It's a big job. I don't even want to think about it.
Don't look at
Lindsay's me there. Lindsay's not looking happy about that.
No, but do you know what I mean? It's because that's a way for publishers to make money, right? And now YouTube said, well, you know what? We've run out of inventory because most of the inventory on our platform is shit, and this is really good inventory and we want to sell it. So, whatever. Tough shit.
Lindsay?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the point. I think for those that use YouTube as a discovery tool and have gained and garnered a huge audience via YouTube but aren't part of the YPP, as everyone's calling it, I'm cool.
YouTube Partner Program.
They will be... very annoyed by this, and you know, it might well just mean that they'll just join the YPP, because actually maybe that's just an easier thing. If you've got something like, is it over 4,000 hours of viewing in a 12-month period, you're eligible for it. Mm. And of course, if your content is of a certain genre. But for everybody else who doesn't necessarily use it for discoverability, you know, much like many us and our competitors aren't really using YouTube in that way, we're embedding those videos onto our site. Do we want those embedded videos on our site to be showing pre-roll ads beforehand?
No. The answer to that.
It's not relevant, it's not appropriate. It affects a lot of what people will do in their on-site activities, not just how they appear as a YouTube creator. Mm. So for those people, Vimeo, which for a small annual fee, you can get many more features on Vimeo than you can on YouTube in terms of security, privacy, everything else. It might make you go, yeah, I'd rather use a platform like that instead.
What do you think, Google's motivation is for this. I mean, it's
inventory.
Not like
it's like
money.
Yeah. I know, but it's not like they're short of it. No, I mean, this is annoying a lot of people,
right? But
they
probably haven't got enough inventory on YouTube, decent inventory, because you've got a lot of brands. It's like it's the AdSense thing, right? It's like the mid to long tail, right? We're in the long tail, right? We've got a sizable audience, but we're not looking to monetize from YouTube. We're just using it as a distribution channel, right? Mm. Like publishers use YouTube on their site. So now it's like, oh, we're going to run ads. And I'm going, that's outrageous. Where's our money? Like, are you going to give us money? If they turn around and say, we're going to give you a rev share, I said, well, I don't want a rev share. And have they offered it?
Exactly, because a lot of content creators just don't want ads running alongside their content for all the reasons that you've just stated.
Many of them monetize it through in-video sponsorship, so via product-based sponsorship, or like what we do with Trailer Talk TV, for example.
Yeah, the Trailer Talk. So, I mean, unless this is just throwing it out there, and then they're going to turn around and go, well, for a fee, you cannot have any ads, right? Okay, fair enough.
Hmm.
Maybe they have to support the platform. But it just sees it. It just
and it will put them in direct competition with alternative providers like Vimeo and others, right? And I wonder if also it's going to do anything. I'm just wondering if there are content creators that may have started off using it for more social purposes, social media purposes, that will now be funneled into other social media platforms. Altogether.
Yeah, think about,
because I don't need to use it. YouTube got them where they are now, but actually now they're so big they could actually just go to any other channel, and they're also big on TikTok. TikTok. Oh my god.
Oh, TikTok.
Also big on TikTok.
That was a
hot social media. TikTok.
That was when I
went over to TikTok, the hot aficionado social media. I'm wearing my bowler hat today.
It was a bread brand growing up in Australia.
Oh, was
TikTok.
It?
Yep, TikTok sliced white, TikTok wholemeal.
Oh, lovely.
Yep, so that's Jesus. Anyway.
Right.
I'm feeling very sorry for our audience right now. Yeah, go on, Karen.
Think about this one, right? When you watch, if you watch certain videos, right? For instance, like you be watching like Bitcoin's obviously huge growth in Bitcoin at the minute, and you want to know about certain things. You'll be hearing videos and videos and videos where you'll see no ads at all. So Google's just said, look, we have a shit ton of inventory, which is actually really good, right? That we could sell to long tail advertisers. So what they do is take all that, bundle up with data, and put it in the exchange or put it somewhere else. So clearly YouTube is looking to make more money off their inventory. And rightly so. Think about this way, right? CTV at scale, it's YouTube, right? So how do they increase their inventory sources beyond the crap that's on there? Because there's a lot of crap on YouTube. This stuff is good stuff, right? It's like, you know, help sort of videos or in B2B videos or whatever. And that has got certain scale there, clearly, and because they wouldn't have done this otherwise.
Mm.
They've been sitting around going, and obviously Google's numbers have been flat, right? They haven't been flat, but there's a lot of pressure on Google to make more money off the ad business because they've been unsuccessful elsewhere. So they have a growing cloud business, but it's not even near AWS or Azure, right? They've got other projects that haven't really taken off. So the ad business is still the bread and butter for Google. And YouTube is their own property. So whatever they make of it, they're making 100%. It goes into their pockets.
Mm.
So like they're saying to the people like us, right?
Content creators.
Yeah. They're saying we're running ads, right? It's a free platform.
Live with it.
Live with it or go away. And most people can go, you know what? Does it really matter to me? That's a lot of work going to Vimeo, as Lindsay said. This is a free platform, ad-supported platform.
Well,
it's a classic Google play.
For some content creators, it won't matter, but for some it will, and we would be one of them, I have to say.
Yeah, I don't want ads running against our stuff.
No. Yeah, and it'll be the smaller ones that aren't big enough to be on the partner program that will be very frustrated by this, because I would like to be on the partner program, but you won't let me. But you deem my content good enough to run ads on it, but not good enough to actually give me a share of the revenue.
Well, exactly.
But here's the classic part, right? Well, I need to know about this, but if you embed the code into another website, which is a lot of YouTube stuff, including ourselves, does that mean the pre-rolls are appearing on third-party sites?
What we need to find out. I don't know yet.
Because that would give them even more scale.
Yeah, because all they've done is just update the terms of service. They haven't actually announced it officially.
No, update the terms.
But also what I'm interested in...
Google
search, how it integrates with Google search will be interesting as well, because actually what you'd find a lot, if I'm trying to search how to, for example, get the seeds out of a pomegranate, is a recent example I had to try and do. What Google does now is they will find relevant clips within videos to show you, and they will appear in Google search results. So if I'm now watching, and it might start the video at like 1 minute 14 and only show me 20 seconds of it, because that is what they deem to be the relevant part of that video based on how they are able to scrape content. Will they be showing ads before those snippets as well? Will they be tying it into their Google search as well? Or will it just be on full videos? So I'm fascinated to see how that works.
So they know what levers to pull. And they're probably thinking to themselves, we could probably make another couple of billion per quarter off the back of this, because YouTube is like growing like a weed. It is it's Google's, one of Google's crown jewels, right? It is the third biggest search engine in the world, right? It is completely their own revenue. It is outside the US. It is the CTV model. If you want to buy CTV, you want to buy targeted audio-visual at scale, you go to YouTube, right? So this is just another way for them to pull the lever and get more money in the door. But the people who lose out are the people who actually made YouTube what it is, the content creators.
Exactly.
And I like maybe there's rev shares going on here, but I don't trust Google.
So far there's not. They've been explicit about that. You will not get any revenue off those ads that are shown.
That's outrageous.
Yeah. Well, and so people are up in arms about it. That's our reason for discussing it. And what impact would it imagine Elizabeth Warren in a future role decides to tackle the breakup of Alphabet, YouTube gets separated.
The first thing I would do if we were splitting up those companies, get YouTube out of Google, because actually YouTube has got real value on its own. It could be an absolute monster of a company. It would be a monster of a company, right? You need to break up Amazon as well. You need to get AWS out of Amazon. You need to split off with shopping. That's another monster. But Google is definitely... like, this is the type of shit that doesn't help these companies. They don't seem to understand. All this does is create the momentum necessary to get groundswell support for a breakup, right? And there are enough Democrats and angry Republicans who think that Google's a liberal Chinese... gateway to the US to break that company up. And you know what? I think it's necessary now. They can't help themselves. They're a machine, right? They need to make profit. They need to show the market they're growing, right? And this is just another example. And the people that get thrown under the bus are the users, right? The actual content producers that make YouTube great, right? Because if they didn't have the UGC, user-generated content, there would be no YouTube. There would be no YouTube. It would be just a fragment. It would be a shell of itself showing like music videos. It's just a tiny part of the consumption of the overall platform. So it's no, like, look, I can't wait to see. Elizabeth Warren would be an amazing, I don't know if she'd pass or get through the Senate because she's quite a controversial figure, but she certainly would be the type of woman who would just basically take a sledgehammer and start busting these companies up. Like, and it's badly required now.
Well, we've had two examples here on the podcast, right, of, you know, the Apple story and the YouTube story, both examples of doing something with the left hand and something different with the right hand, right, Lindsay?
That's the way they do it.
Things that they can't be criticised for, and things that are just so contradictory, it makes you angry. So,
But these companies don't act on a whim. This would have gone through.
No, it'll all be very well thought through, very carefully thought through. You would imagine anyway. You would expect it would be.
But does it show, this is a question both of you, but does it show a level of arrogance from them going, you know what, EU's suing us or fining us and suing us, and the EU and the US, the states are suing us. Well, you know, we don't care. Like, we're just going to go ahead. So break the rules and ask for permission later. Like, is that what's happening here?
Definitely. They're looking at things and going, well, we have got a lot of demand and we probably haven't, in our partner program, we haven't got the right inventory to be able to supply to that demand. So actually by doing this, this makes everything much, much rosier for us. And I might encourage more people to enter the partner program and bring more inventory along the way. And then we can reassess. They're probably just, yeah, I think they're, it does show an extreme level of arrogance. But they are arrogant.
Well, exactly. And I wonder as well if, you know, sometimes I think they're almost like runaway criminals, just you know, grabbing cash, as much cash as they possibly can before they get caught. And then some days I think, well, no, exactly as you just said, Kieran, someone somewhere within those organisations has got to have an overall strategic point of view on this and has got to be thinking, let's just be a little bit careful about how we craft certain changes in terms and conditions within certain parts of our business, because governments are going to start breathing down our neck, and we're going to have to justify ourselves at some point. But then, just as I say that, I'm thinking about the News Media Bargaining Code, furor down in Australia, and Google's point of view on that was pathetic, is the only way it could be described.
That is a great way of describing it. Yeah.
So
really strange that.
But they're so big. But the thing is, I can't feel sorry for Google, because it's an absolute monster of a company. They make so much profit, it makes me sick to the stomach. But they're so big now that they can't help themselves, right? They kind of almost... Could you imagine YouTube as an independent company? I would buy that stock from day one. I think YouTube is an amazing... and I wouldn't have no problem if YouTube independently did this. I'm going, that's their business. But the fact is that it's so interlinked with the rest of Google, which affects ad tech, because no external DSP or platform can access YouTube inventory, which is anti-competitive itself. I actually got told by a former Google executive there that they knew it was anti-competitive, that they actually knew in the company, but did it anyway. And he told me, like, it's, you know.
So I think it's also the result of just having had so much power for such a long time. I just think that naturally corrupts you as an organisation, as an individual. I was just thinking when I was watching the last episode of The Crown last night, and there's quite a poignant scene when, as Margaret Thatcher is being ousted by her, formerly loyal political colleagues, and she's grasping on to the last, sort of remnants of power, and is very reluctant to let go. And she has, of course, this is highly dramatised, probably never happened, but allegedly has a conversation with the Queen, where the Queen's basically saying, well, you can't hold on to power forever. And Margaret Thatcher says to the Queen, you're saying that because you can, because you are going to always be powerful.
Which is so true.
Yeah. And just watching it, I thought, but also this is ridiculous, because you were the Prime Minister, a long-standing Prime Minister of one of the world's best-known democracies. Of course you're not going to be around forever. You've got to go at some point, but it happens to everyone that has power for long enough, right? In politics or in business. And it's going to be a really interesting couple of years, particularly in the US under the Biden administration.
Yeah, and I think the EU as well. The EU have changed their laws around. They're taking a leaf out of the Gaffer book. They're going to break rules and ask for forgiveness later. They're going to say, we're going to make you stop that until you rectify that situation. Turn that off. Can you imagine? Just turn that service off. Billions of dollars get waylaid, and Google's going to go, oh no, we're going to better do this. But the funny thing, I know I've said this before, but I remember talking to an Amazon guy before COVID kicked in. And he says that Amazon literally is like a series of businesses within the whole co. And they're all ready to break up. Jeff Bezos is ready, I'm going to do it. He's not going to actively go out and do it.
But unless he's forced to, but he's at the ready if he needs to.
But he will be forced to, Rachel, because these companies are gobbling and controlled so much of the digital spend, which is basically the real economy right now, that we're in a position where these companies will be either broken up or they will be forced to divest of certain assets. And that will happen in probably, in the next 24 months, there's going to be a lot of big stuff happening.
Big movement.
That's fascinating, because he's done that, you know, whether he wants to or can do or whatever, he's done that knowing that it might happen at some point and it's ready to go. Google did the opposite. Google merged everything together. They merged their ads business together.
Yeah, exactly. To try to make it less, to make it harder to pull apart. So interesting. Speaking of gobbling up, let's stop gobbling up listeners' time. I think that's...
Listeners are loving this.
Well, I'm not sure.
Top of the charts.
I'm not sure.
Write in and give us some feedback. We do read all our posts.
Here's another one from Amory. Shut the fuck up and buy and get some lunch.
Thank you very much, Kieran. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you.
/ Sound Guy. And that was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.
Aren't you a technology supplier looking for deal flow? Then you should try our new platform, Connect. It's designed to help buyers and brands find the best tech solutions to match their campaign requirements. It's free for buyers to use and for tech suppliers to set up an account and start applying to campaign briefs. Set up your account today by visiting exchangewire.com/connect or email us at info@thewirecorp.com.